Not a great start to the June economic calendar. We'll also talk markets, yields, crude oil, and housing. Welcome back to the Bitcoin Layer. I'm Nick Bhatia. Let's get right into this morning's economic release. We had ISM manufacturing come out this morning, and we saw it miss expectations and a little bit of a slowdown from last month. So let's take a look at this first chart. I have here two data series. One is the ISM manufacturing, which released this morning, came in at 48.7. Remember that 50 line is our neutral line between expansion and contraction of activity. The purple line here is the Chicago PMI. So this is the same concept here. It's a survey of businesses, but for this Chicago PMI, an enormous miss of expectations and a decline down to 35.4. This is actually very deep in recession territory here on the Chicago PMI. But the asterisk and the thing that I want you guys to understand is that when we look at the array of economic data throughout the calendar, we have to do our best to filter through the noise, right? There are hundreds of data prints, but we have to choose which ones we are going to take the signal from. And so even though the Chicago PMI number here at 35.4 screams recession, it's not historically the most reliable indicator. I'm showing you the both of these indicators together here with ISM manufacturing and Chicago PMI so that you can see these two indicators closely track each other but have great variability throughout different parts of the business cycle. And here you can see Chicago PMI forecasting a very bad situation, but ISM manufacturing not so much. Now the dip in ISM from last month to this month down to 48.7, it's not an enormous deal, but this bad start to the economic data is starting to translate into financial markets. So we're going to take a look at the markets, the dollar and treasury yields here shortly, but I wanted to start with what happened and what we learned from the economy in May. Now let's take a look closer at one of the subcomponents that we are watching really closely in these ISM releases, ISM manufacturing prices paid. So this is the line here in orange, and what you see is a little bit of a dip from 60 to down to 57. So here what we are seeing is that prices are finally slowing in ISM manufacturing, and this is after a 5 or 6 month period in which prices were ramping up pretty materially. You had a slight dip there in the beginning of January, but all in all, since December, we've had a huge rise in prices here in the ISM manufacturing. What we feel is that that is going to translate into CPI over the coming couple months, keeping CPI where it is. But we will watch for ISM prices, both in services and manufacturing, coming down, and that might relieve the pressure on inflation a little bit. The Bitcoin Layer is proud to be sponsored by River. Make sure you check them out at river.com/TBL for a special offer of up to $100 of Bitcoin for free when you purchase. Now, River is our Bitcoin exchange of choice. They are Bitcoin only. They do not custody your Bitcoin at a third-party platform, and they encourage you to get your Bitcoin off of their exchange into self-custody. Go check them out today at river.com/TBL. Again, why do we care about ISM manufacturing? Because ISM manufacturing correlates with the stock market and generally asset returns. Why is the ISM manufacturing survey correlated with the stock market? Well, I can explain to you the causation both ways, meaning I can explain why ISM going up will help stocks, and I can also explain why stocks going up will help ISM. That's why we can't think in terms of causation, merely in terms of a relationship. So we do see, however, that stocks can lead here the economic indicator, both down and up, as you see. Stocks, this is the year-over-year return in purple. Stocks were up over 50% year-over-year in early 2021 when the ISM manufacturing survey was well above 60. But after that, the stock market started to decline, and that led ISM manufacturing lower. So stocks actually were the tell here that the economy was going to weaken. So let me explain to you why we can't necessarily think of this as causation, but better to interpret it in terms of the relationship. When stocks go up, this creates a wealth effect. The wealth effect is an economic concept that says when people's stock portfolios and home values go up, they feel wealthier, and therefore they're more likely to spend, and that boosts the economy. So that's the wealth effect, is that they feel wealthier when asset prices go up. So this is why a good stock market can lead to a good economy. But the other side of it is that a good economy will generate healthy consumers, and healthy consumers will drive profits. Profits going up will drive companies to hire more and expand more, raise wages, and all of that. So that's why these two things move together, and we can't necessarily think of causation, but it is a good thing to think about the stock market as a leading indicator. So if there is a recession on the horizon, we would imagine that the stock market would sniff it out. The asterisk there is that the stock market over the last several years has developed a sensitivity to easy monetary policy conditions. That means when the economy gets bad, conditions get easy and stocks like easy conditions. So there are a lot of moving parts, and we always have to keep these things in mind. Now in this next chart, let's go to the money markets here for a couple charts, and I want to explain a very important concept here. But we saw SOFR volumes hit an all-time high above $2 trillion. They haven't been there really more than three times, and this is the highest daily print that we've ever had. Now, what are SOFR volumes again? This is, you can think of it as Treasury securities inventory at primary dealers. So the banks, that it's their job to help the auctions function, take down excess supply when the demand falls short. And it's their job to hold these securities in inventory and then shuffle them out to investors. So the inventory at the primary dealers must be financed, because these dealers, when they buy treasuries at the auction, do you think they're showing up with cash? No, they're taking those treasuries onto their inventory and then immediately using them as collateral to finance the purchase. The collateral that they post is the same collateral that they are bidding. So what that means is that the process of finding financing for the inventory must occur simultaneously with the settlement of the treasury securities from auction. Let me say that in the other direction. When the auction happens, primary dealers take supply onto their balance sheet. They have a few days until they must send cash to the government to pay for those bonds. In those few days, they are going to line up their financing from the repo market. Then at the point of settlement, they will take the treasuries onto their balance sheet. They will take cash from the repo market, give that cash to the government, and keep the treasury on their balance sheet. And in this way, they are temporarily housing inventory using the repo market. So when we see SOFR volumes increase, what that means, more inventory to finance. Why is there more inventory? We hope you already know the answer to that question. $10 trillion in cumulative deficits over the last 5 years. This is no joke. There are plenty of treasuries that must be financed through the repo market and through the investment community at large. Now, the investment community cannot always swallow these treasuries as they come, so they have to find the temporary home. That happens at the primary dealer level, and that's why you see SOFR volume spiking. It is a sign that the market is getting saturated with these bonds. Now, shouldn't that mean a lower price, meaning a higher yield? Now, you would think that a huge amount of inventory that takes time to be digested, that would cause lower prices and higher yields. We refer to the path of least resistance for treasuries being higher in yield. This is one of the reasons why there's just a lot of supply and the investment community will take time to take it all down. It might take a higher yield and a lower price to attract that demand. But what do we see here to start the month of June? A big rally in treasury prices, decline in yield. So it's not always A causes B. Now in this next money markets chart, I want to just walk you through why we are looking at SOFR rates all the time. We talk about the SOFR volumes on the previous chart. That's the amount of inventory that needs to be financed. Now, what is the financing level? It's the orange line here, which is the SOFR rate. That is the rate that dealers are paying to the market to finance this inventory. So when we have SOFR ticking up, it happens usually based on calendar movements. There can be shortfalls in funding. We have to watch for those. Right now, though, we don't necessarily see any shortfalls in funding. We just see the SOFR rate spike a little bit when the calendar hits month end or quarter end or year end. Why do repo rates spike on month end? Think of all that inventory. The banks must finance that inventory and have a clean book at the end of the month. So in order to do that, they have to make sure their financing is done early enough in the morning or in the week before that week closes, and they must make sure that all their positions are correctly financed. In order to do that, they boost the rate a little bit to attract funds and close their books early and clean. So that's why we see the black line, which is a bilateral repo rate, and the orange line, which is the SOFR rate. That's the average tri-party rate in the market. These rates spiked a little bit on 531, but we do expect them to come back down in June, and make sure to subscribe to our free research publication at thebitcoinlayer.com/subscribe so you can keep posted on all of these dynamics. Now I want to shift gears to markets. Let's talk about the FX market for a second and the dollar. I have for you on the screen the dollar-yen cross. Now we did a video recently on a huge devaluation in the Japanese yen. That's this line moving higher as the dollar strengthens versus the yen. And you see that huge spike there just a few weeks ago in the market. This was the yen undergoing a big devaluation. But what do we see now here? A little bit of a strengthening of the Japanese yen. So this is not a take on what's happening in Japan. Rather, my goal here is to show you that this dollar strength and the momentum of the dollar strength, which was associated in part with a weak Japanese yen, it might be subsiding, and what might be driving a little bit of a dollar weakness. There are two things right now. Number one, lower rates. So if rates go lower, this diminishes the attractiveness of the dollar versus other currencies. So if we see rates come down, that could diminish the attractiveness of the dollar, and we might see the dollar fall. On the other hand, we have a slowing economy, and the slowing economy should, all else being equal, reduce growth expectations, inflation expectations, and yield at the treasury level. So that is why the economy is related to treasury yields, is related to the dollar. We have to watch all these things. Are we at an inflection point here? A little bit of the weaker dollar coming back, higher yields giving way to lower yields. That might be what we are seeing right here. Now, there's only one day in June price action, but this is now a theme that we're going to be watching this week. Remember that next week is CPI on Wednesday and the FOMC meets on June 12th. That is a very important date for two reasons, both on inflation and to see what the Fed is going to forecast in terms of how many cuts it is still expecting to deliver to the market. Yes, we are still expecting the Fed to cut rates this year. In addition to next week's FOMC and CPI, we have a huge economic data set coming this week. Tomorrow on Tuesday, we have JOLTS, that is the employment survey. where we get information on the number of quits and hires and listings for jobs. On Wednesday, we have ISM services. We talked about ISM manufacturing today. ISM services, a very important data point. And then on Friday, non-farm payrolls, the unemployment rate, and average hourly earnings. So the market has a lot now to digest here over the next several days until we get to June 12th and the FOMC. Here is a chart of the dollar. Now, this yellow trend line is the increasing trend dollar strength starting about at the end of December. So the dollar has had a really nice run. Remember what we said at the beginning of the year. Q1 will probably bring some weakness to treasury prices, higher treasury yields. That has gone along with a stronger dollar. Now you are in a seasonal point where we might be getting some strength. And what do you see? The dollar now breaking down below this trend line. This is something to flag here. The dollar breaking down is below this trend line is us observing here that the market is processing the data, getting a little bit more worried about the US economy, buying treasuries here. Yields have gone lower today. Buying treasuries, a little bit of a slowing growth trade, slowing inflation trade, and that hits the dollar. So this is what the Fed and the government really wants to see here. The government wants to see a little bit of a weak dollar. We've covered that recently with Yellen. The Fed would like to see rates come down a little bit, and the Fed wants to see rates come down. Why? Because if rates come down, that makes the whole apparatus easier to finance. It also removes the potential for the Fed to come in and have to support the market. Now, here I want to take a second. We have discussed, and we've had guests on, guest after guest, expecting higher treasury yields. We have also told you the path of least resistance on treasuries is higher, on treasury yields is higher. Right? And what you hear from a lot of analysts out there is that the higher treasury yields that might be due from all the supply is the thing that's going to bring the Fed back into the market. It's something that we also believe in the potential of. But what could be happening instead? Yields might move lower off of lower growth expectations and do the Fed's job for them. Meaning the Fed might not have to come in and support this market with higher yields, the market might move lower in yields and do the Fed's job for them. So the Fed is happier with lower yields. The government is happier with a weaker dollar. The weaker dollar is inflationary for the U.S. economy, and an inflationary dynamic with the U.S. economy is better for debt to GDP. And I also want to mention here one thing in terms of what the government wants, what the Fed wants, the election coming up. Don't be too quick to just think that the Fed wants the incumbent to win, so the Fed is going to cut. Think of it, you have to think of it in a more dynamic way. If the government wants higher inflation to enact financial repression and diminish the real value of this $35 trillion in debt, then it will enact policies to boost inflation. A weaker dollar would do that. But a slowing dollar, meaning a weaker dollar, might only come if yields come down. Yields might come down only if the economy is slowing. And if the economy slows, is that good for the incumbent or not? It's not good for the incumbent because then we're looking at a bad economy. For this reason, it's dangerous to just think the Fed wants this, the Treasury wants this, higher dollar or a weaker dollar, higher yields or lower yields. So we just have to watch the market progress and we have to watch the rhetoric out of Yellen and Powell to see what the true reaction functions are. On this next chart here, I have daily 10-year yields here. Now, you see the most recent candle. This is a 10 basis point move lower in yields today on June 3rd, Monday. And with this move, you're back to the lower end of the channel and threatening now a move back to this 4 1/3 level, which we broke out of and sent yields above 4 3/4 here earlier this year. So Are we seeing a breakdown of treasury yields and some strength finally coming back into the treasury market on a weak economy? Potentially, yes. So that is what we are going to be watching. And that is why the next 2 weeks of economic data are so important. Is the labor market really slowing? Is inflation really slowing? If it is, we can get 5.5% policy rates out of there. And the Fed is thinking along these lines. That's why they're trying to get the market to keep 1 to 2 rate cuts priced in. The last I checked here, about 17 to 19 basis points priced in for September and 25 for November. So the Fed is still priced in for at least one cut this year, and we'll continue to watch how the economic data drives yields, specifically the 2-year part of the curve. If we can see 2-year yields capped at around 4.75, this means that cuts are coming. And right now, that is exactly where twos are. Now, this chart is my last market charts for you today. A big surprise here in the price action in crude oil. We would generally think that a weaker dollar would be supportive for crude, but we had an OPEC meeting and we also had bad economic data this morning. What does that do? It is sending the oil price a lot lower and it's breaking down below some of these trend lines. So we're watching oil to give us an indication that the economy, really the global economy, is slowing. And if treasury yields are going down and oil is going down at the same time, it should be a red flag and something that you guys are watching. And so that is what we will be doing. Now, to close out today's video, I want to talk about two charts that I struck from the Redfin webpage today. So we're seeing a lot of housing analysts cite Redfin data as being more real time than Case-Shiller, which is 2 to 3 months delayed in terms of housing prices. Redfin is the way to go right now with looking at high frequency data. And we saw an article over the weekend from Bloomberg talk about inventories in the housing market are starting to build. 7% mortgages are being more punitive for new household formation versus these people that are stuck in their home and reducing the amount of supply. That dynamic where the supply is not coming onto market because people are stuck in their home, it's giving way to some weakness in the economy and a desire for people to get out under these delinquencies. We're starting to see delinquencies tick up here. So let's look at this Redfin data. The first chart I have for you is active listings with price drops. So the blue line is 2023 and the black line is 2022. So what do we see here? The yellow line is this year, and you are seeing, which should be a seasonal strength period and seasonal strength here, we are seeing above 6% of active listings are experiencing price drops. This is the highest pace in the last several years, and this is what we are starting to see. The price drops will happen way before a nationwide price index starts to come down. And so price drops is one of these leading indicators that we're watching here. Now, don't think of us as some expert analyst on the housing market that's looking at Redfin data every day, but we are starting to read the financial media cover Redfin data with more frequency. So we went to the data ourselves and we came out with a couple charts. The second one here is weeks of supply. So again, the yellow line is 2024. The blue line is last year. So we already see weeks of supply at a higher level than they were last year and the highest in the last several years. So price drops are increasing. And the weeks of supply is increasing. It just means building inventory in the US housing market. So that is something to watch. Remember, housing is 20% of GDP. So there's a huge economic impact from a slowdown in housing. What we saw over the last year is that home prices have been very nicely supported. And that has led to an increase in the wealth effect and supported the economy. But if that turns, you got to look out below for the housing market and then potentially the economy and treasury yield. So I wanted to bring you guys the more bullish side of the treasury market today and why present the case why yields went lower today and why they could be going lower. And that is in the backdrop of all of the supply that we've talked about over the last several months here, $10 trillion in cumulative deficits, no slowdown in spending looking forward, neither party campaigning on a cut in spending, and one of the parties campaigning on a cut in taxes. So there's no prospect here of a decrease in deficits. And so that means more treasury supply. More treasury supply means that the curve, all else being equal, should steepen. But if it continues to flatten or yields come down, we know that a weak economy is actually dominating the effect of large treasury deficits. Thanks for sticking with us today at the Bitcoin Layer. We'll catch you guys next time. The Bitcoin Layer is proud to be sponsored by River. River is a Bitcoin-only exchange. So if you guys are looking for a place to get allocated, go check out river.com/TBL for a special offer of up to $100 of Bitcoin for free when you go sign up and purchase Bitcoin. River does not keep your Bitcoin with a third party. So avoid these court cases and third-party custodian risk with River. They have a great proprietary solution. Go check them out today, river.com/TBL.